Hey, everybody. Welcome to Daniel Davis Deep Dive, where the show goes on, even though Danny's on vacation. We have Jim Jatras, good friend of the show, former U.S. diplomat, GOP Senate foreign policy advisor. And everything you want to know about Jim is at Jim Jatras on his X account. Jim, good to see you. How are you?
Gary, it's always a pleasure to be with you and Danny. And great. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Jim, I contacted you because there was a testimony that occurred yesterday that I think probably is going under the radar, and it shouldn't go under the radar. Just zeroing in on the testimony of CENTCOM Commander Admiral Brad Cooper. Jim, I just want to watch this with you, and let's talk about it as we're watching it. We'll start off with the first questioner, Representative Seth Moulton from Washington.
Admiral Cooper, you keep using the term significantly degraded. Last summer, we were told that Iran's nuclear weapons program was obliterated. Can you clarify the distinction between obliterated and significantly degraded?
Congressman, again, I think appropriate to talk about anything regarding the Iranian nuclear program.
No, I'm not asking you to talk about the Iran nuclear program. I'm asking you to talk about English language. What's the difference between obliterated and significantly degraded? Are they the same?
Congressman, anything regarding the nuclear program?
I'm not asking you to talk about the nuclear program, Admiral. I'm asking you to answer a question that applies to a lot of things beyond the nuclear program. You've also said that their ballistic missile program was significantly degraded. What does that mean?
Jim, you think these are fair questions?
Actually, yes. I mean, administration spokesmen have thrown so much of this language around. They keep using terms like utterly destroyed, decimated, which, of course, I think they're misusing that word. Right. I mean, what exactly do they mean? And of course, look, in all fairness to the admiral, when he says, I can't talk about the nuclear program, and then Mr. Moulton says, I'm talking about the English language. Yes, but he's doing it in reference to what the admiral said about the nuclear program. So if he answers the question with precision about what the difference is, he is talking about to what extent the nuclear program has been significantly degraded versus obliterated.
I guess I'd rather hear him say, they're dissimilar. I'd like to hear a little bit of a qualification. I understand we're not looking for secrets.
Sure.
But to just meander around and be wishy-washy about it like that, where I think he could be a little bit more forthcoming, it rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe he can't be more forthcoming because, A, either they don't know about what the extent of the damage is, or also, look, again, to be fair to the admiral, I'm sure there's a lot of people in the military right now who realize what a pickle we're in and put up a brave front in front of the Congress critters in these hearings. At the same time, hopefully, let's hope they're giving some real Dutch uncle advice to the president, saying, Mr. President, we just can't do this. This isn't working.
Yeah, Jim, I guess I want more, Jim. If you're going to say decimated, do you mean decimated?
Yeah.
Tell me what you mean. Speak English to me.
Yeah.
And if you're going to back off from decimated, well, tell me why
technically decimated is only killing 1 out of 10. It doesn't mean actually devastated as people use it. So what does decimated mean when they say decimated? Do they mean in the classic sense, or do they mean in sort of the generic sense that people tend to use it nowadays?
Right. Well, I want them to be more careful with their language.
Yeah, well, I got a question about that.
I got the wrong impression. I don't know if I'm the only one either. All right, let's continue. There's more here. Here we go.
The specific numbers are best, as you know, from your own.
Well, President Trump's own national security strategy, which he signed in December 5 months ago, used the exact same phrase, significantly degraded. So if this was true back then, 5 months ago, then why did we start this war? Was he lying to us then?
Congressman, from a military perspective, anything regarding
Admiral, are you familiar with General? Are you familiar with General Westmoreland?
I'm very familiar, Congressman.
He's well known for talking about body counts. Now, when I think about you in this war, I always think about how you always got up there and would say everything's going according to plan. So let me just ask, Admiral, where was closing the strait in the plan?
I'm happy to discuss the specific operational aspects.
But did you just not anticipate that? Do you not think that Iran could do that? Or was that part of the plan here?
Congressman,
for 250 years, the Navy has kept sea lanes open and free. Under every previous president, the Strait of Hormuz has been open. So why is it closed under your watch?
Congressman, I've traveled through the Strait of Hormuz probably 100 times. I'm intimately familiar with it as a combatant commander.
But why is it closed? If you're so familiar with it, did you not anticipate that Iran might
answer the question? If I may ask, with respect, with all due respect, my responsibility as a combatant commander is to lay out all the options, present those to the secretary and the president. They make policy level decisions.
So you presented the
operational,
the option.
The operational aspect.
So Admiral, you presented the reality that Iran might close a strait to the president and the secretary of defense.
Anything that I discuss with respect to
okay, well, let's go back to the plan. Where was begging China for help opening the strait part of the plan?
So from a military perspective,
there are multiple reports now public that Iran has already reconstituted many of its bombed out missile sites. Was that part of the plan too?
Those reports are inaccurate.
Okay. I will actually give you credit for regime change. I know that was part of the plan. You've replaced an 86-year-old in failing health with a fatwa against producing nuclear weapons, with a more hardline guy in his 50s, who, in case he wasn't hardline enough, you killed his immediate family. Was that part of the plan?
Well, there's some delivery. Let's hear how he goes on here.
Is that the regime change you wanted?
Congressman, we were given very specific military objectives to degrade Iran's power projection capability. That's exactly what we did.
Okay, so in the course of doing that, you also lifted the oil sanctions on Iran, giving them about $14 to $16 billion. They can buy a lot of ballistic missiles for that. Was that part of the plan? Lifting oil sanctions on them in the course of the conflict? They kill 14 Americans, we lift oil sanctions on them?
As you know, sir, the U.S. military does not lift sanctions. That's a policy decision.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out where it was part of the plan. On March 5th, you know, you talked about how you built the most integrated air defense system in the Middle East, and yet well into the war, you had to ask Ukraine for help with defenses against drones.
That's not accurate.
Okay. What about oil prices, gas prices? Was oil prices going up 56% part of the plan?
Congressman, as you know, from a military perspective, we don't deal in oil and gas prices. I defer to the appropriate authorities within the government.
So since none of this seems to be part of the plan, what's the plan now? What's the plan now to actually win this war? Because it feels like we're losing. We don't have a nuclear deal. We don't have the strait open. The president has called for unconditional surrender. Is that part of the plan?
Congressman, we achieved all our military objectives. We're presently in a ceasefire. We're executing a blockade, and we're prepared for a broad range of contingencies.
Well, it doesn't seem to be going well, and I would like to know how many more Americans we have to ask to die for this mistake. Do you know?
I think it's an entirely inappropriate statement from you, sir.
With all due respect.
It's not a statement. It's a question.
You're not recognized, the gentleman from Tennessee.
Jim, what's your assessment there?
Just in human terms, you have to feel sorry for the admiral there because, you know, he's out there defending, an indefensible policy, doing his best within. And yeah, what he points out, it's not the military's job to talk about gas prices and things like
right,
that.
Right? Yeah, I thought he was energy.
Yeah,
he was just trying to score points with some of those questions, like that one exactly. Well, of course, point. Yeah. And the way he ended, I thought was, you know, he didn't have to go there, talking about how many more deaths do you anticipate? I thought that was a low blow, but. I thought many of those questions were right on target, but go ahead.
They're clearly our gotcha questions. There's no question about that. But the fact of the matter is, Gary, the policy stinks. The war was a tremendous mistake. I mean, it's worse than a crime. It's a blunder, and I don't think they know how they're going to get out of this mess. And the admiral, with all due respect to the congressman, he only has this much. of the policy mess that's within his direct purview, as opposed to, you know, energy prices and, you know, as far as closing the Strait of Hormuz, I don't think he can avoid the fact that everybody knew that that was one of the possible consequences of launching the attack. Did they specifically advise the president that the Iranians would do this? If they didn't, then they are derelict in their responsibility. Oh, they wouldn't dare do that. Well, maybe they did tell the president. Well, they're likely to do this, and he just said he didn't care. I don't know.
Well, you know, why couldn't he have said, you know, yes, we did We didn't anticipate it to happen, but we knew it could happen, and we hate that it did happen, and we are correcting it now. I mean, is that, I guess that would be too much to admit to?
As he was talking, that's exactly the thought that occurred to me, to say, well, we always knew that that was one of the possibilities. Yeah. And he could say that without saying, and we directly advised the president to that effect,
because right.
we want to talk about what the right. internal because, communications were.
Exactly, because otherwise, yeah. he looks like a fool. How can we trust him? Which you're going to hear a little bit later, actually. And, you know, it just hates seeing somebody like that when they could just, without getting into details, yeah. we don't need those kind of details, but just, you know, fess up to what everybody understands and can see with their own eyes.
No, I think the congressman knows, he realizes he's got somebody in front of him whose foot is nailed to the floor and he can't get away. And he can sit there and pepper him with these gotcha questions. Yeah. And he's gonna have to try to wriggle around, because that's his job there right now, is to stand there and take the arrows for the administration. And, you know, he's doing about as good of, what do they call, the Brits call it, making the best of a bad job. That's yeah. essentially what he's doing up there.
Yeah. Let's get into the next section. Before we get into the questioning itself, I want to remind everybody what happened on the very first day of the war. A children's school, a girls' school, was hit in Iran, and 168 were killed. Most of them were schoolgirls. What we're being told is that we don't know exactly who hit it, even though it was a Tomahawk missile that was used. That is one thing that we have heard, at least has been reported. But still, it's just under investigation. And you can imagine how that has struck the Iranian people. It's devastating to them. And these are just scenes, as you can see, of the burial and the funeral procession. So with that in mind, again, the very first day of the war, that's what occurred. It's been that long. It's been, what, 80 days or so? And still, we don't have any answers. So with that in mind, we'll go into the next part of the question. And this is Representative Adam Smith.
It's been 80 days, thereabouts, since the initial bombing campaign that struck the girls' school in Iran. Tehran killed, I think, over 150 schoolgirls. It's really pretty clear what happened there. But 80 days on, we have not taken responsibility for that attack. The endless stalling that's being investigated, it's being investigated, it's being investigated. In the past, when we've had these types of mistakes, they have been quickly acknowledged, even if a further investigation is necessary to figure out prevention methods. So can you at this moment acknowledge that that mistake was made and that we were responsible for it? It's something we didn't want to do and don't want to repeat.
Congressman, to reiterate, the United States does not deliberately target
civilians. Got that part.
Period. Full stop. And nor are the Iranian people our enemy. The IRGC is the adversary in this case.
I heard that in your opening statement, Admiral. I asked you a very specific question, and I'm curious what the answer is.
So the investigation is ongoing. As soon as it is complete, I'm happy to be as
so that's
transparent
a no.
as possible.
We will not take responsibility for something we very obviously did.
And what... So it's a complex investigation. The school itself is located on an active IRGC cruise missile base.
That point right there is the first time that's been brought to the surface. That mm-hmm. wasn't the original explanation or understanding that we were told. Mm-hmm. So now you can see how the story has taken a slight turn or move over to this. So we'll go on. That's the very first time we've heard that.
Yeah.
It's more complex than the average strike. As soon as we're complete, I'm fully committed to transparency, given your important oversight role and the other members here.
Just so you know, and I have an enormous amount of respect for you and an enormous amount of respect for the Pentagon, I do not trust that answer. What we've seen out of the Secretary of Defense and his callous disregard for any sort of rules of engagement or protecting civilian life may make us suspicious.
Right after that, just let me follow up real quickly. Sky News was on site at where the testimony was being held, and they followed up right afterwards with Cooper at the end of his testimony.
Admiral Mark Stone from Sky News, can you explain why you cannot reveal what happened in Manav?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Investigation's ongoing.
For how long can you hide behind an investigation is ongoing, sir? We have a team in Manav right now. They have seen what happened. They have seen no evidence of an Iranian missile base there. For how long can you hide behind an investigation is happening, sir? When will the investigation conclude? Admiral, can you tell us when the investigation will conclude? Can you say anything to the families who died in Manab, sir.
Well, I like that he's being held accountable like that. Jim, what's your assessment of his response there?
Well, look, I mean, this is not rocket surgery here. I mean, if something like this happens, either it was deliberate or it was accidental. He says it was not deliberate. We don't do that deliberately. Okay, let's take that at face value. That means it was accidental. Now, you can say we're investigating. What were the circumstances? Was it on an active, you know, base and so forth? Nonetheless, whatever the results of that, hypothetically, of that investigation would be, if it was still something that was done by accident, that we did not intend to kill all those kids, but, you know, we were doing good faith, it was on a missile base, we thought it was something else, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that still gets you to the bottom line conclusion that we didn't mean to do this, it was an accident, we're sorry for it, we express our regrets, and we will pay reparations to the families. I mean, remember some decades ago, we had shot down an Iranian jetliner, I think going to pilgrimage to Saudi Arabia, because the ship, again, taking this on good faith, mistakenly thought it was a plane attacking the American vessel. They shot it down. We paid reparations for that. I mean, even in war, if you did something like this by mistake, and taking the admiral's answer at face value, you don't need to know exactly the details of how the mistake was made,
right,
in order to admit it was a mistake. We're sorry for it. We're paying reparations to the families. I mean, he should be able to say that if he's insisting it was a mistake, as he did. This is not that difficult.
Right. And you certainly get the feeling that's where he's going, but yet he won't actually come out and say it.
No, because remember, early on, President Trump was trying to blame it on the Iranians. And he was saying that. In fact, he was standing right in front of Pete Hegseth.
I remember that. He was on Air Force One at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And he's making this really dumb statement. Again, dumb being giving him the benefit of the doubt. And Hegseth sort of squirming around, trying to avoid disagreeing with the boss,
yeah,
in front of everybody. So, you know, again, now, you know, I hate to ask the question. First off, do we even know was this an American strike, not an Israeli strike? And again, the evidence, we know it was a cruise missile. I don't know if the
it was reported at the time, and yeah, I haven't heard anything different.
Right.
It was an American Tomahawk missile.
Yes.
So and who shot it? You know, did Israel shoot it? Did we shoot it?
Exactly. And also, again, maybe this is inaccurate, but there were reports that this was a double tap strike. There was the initial strike, and then there was another strike afterward. Now, again, maybe you could argue that that was defensible if they actually thought it was a military target and there, you know, there were military assets that would be destroyed in the second strike, you know, again, giving them the benefit of the doubt. But nonetheless, if that none of that was accurate, if it was all false information, they thought they were hitting something else, it was still a mistake. They should be able to admit that.
Some of the talk at the time was also that it was, yeah, indeed, it did happen, and yeah, indeed, we did it, but it was unfortunately based on old intel,
yeah,
that somehow was still around, you know, and how would something like that happen?
Yeah, and then you hear talk that, well, you know, even if it was on an IGCR base, that these would have been the daughters of personnel, and this was a way to send a message to the Iranians that this is scorched. I really hope that that explanation is not true.
Yeah.
Secretary of Defense, I don't bother to use the Secretary of War nonsense, Hegseth has, as I understand it, loosened the procedures for identifying targets and ensuring that they're non-military targets, since a lot of this is done by AI. So the question is, you know, how much oversight is there in selecting these targets? I mean, have, you know, because he's got this kind of hairy-chested warfighter kind of thing. We're not going to be bound by petty rules of engagements and things like that. We're going, you know, balls out on this stuff, and who cares what. I mean, I hope, again, that kind of dereliction of responsibility or cavalier attitude towards civilian collateral damage isn't gaining prevalence inside this administration. But again, how do we really know?
We're not going to find out, at least in the immediate. Talking about Pete Hegseth, he is the subject of the next part of this questioning. And I just want to set up, before we get into the question itself, this speech that Secretary was given is what they're talking about.
They're confused, and we know it. Our response, we will keep pressing. We will keep pushing, keep advancing. No quarter, no mercy for our enemies.
As you see, that was in March of this year, and that's the next line of questioning with Representative Smith here.
Do you think it's ever appropriate for anybody in a leadership position to use the words no quarter when describing how we are conducting our operations in Iran?
Sir, I think it's appropriate as military leaders. We follow the law of armed conflict and our constitutional responsibilities, and that's what we've done.
And you would agree that no quarter is not following the law?
I would agree it's our constitutional responsibility to follow the law.
Is no quarter following the law or not?
I would agree that we follow the law, sir.
Generic understanding of it, and then do whatever we want to do with no accountability. Look, people make mistakes. It's in a war. Things happen. I get that, okay? And I'm not going to be as overly judgmental as some. But that the arrogance of this Pentagon and their unwillingness to acknowledge any mistake is precisely the reason that we are in the hole that we're in with no way out of. Somebody in that command needs to own up to the dumb things that are said and done to give us some confidence that they won't keep happening.
Bullseye, man. When I saw that, I was like, oh, that was right between the eyes. He smacked him. Listen, this is a little bit tedious. You know, what's the big deal? He said it one time in one speech and people try to dismiss it. I want to tell you exactly what the Geneva Convention says. So Article 40 of the Additional Protocol, this is back in 1977. It is prohibited to order that there shall be no survivors, mm-hmm. to threaten an adversary therewith, or to conduct hostilities on this basis. And that was basically an updated version of what happened, what was originally written in 1907. The older and more explicit no quarter wording comes from this part mm-hmm. of the convention, Article 23. It is especially forbidden to declare that no quarter will be given. That's what they're talking about. And I thought Smith perfectly couched the situation. Is like, you're making it impossible for us to believe you when you can't even step up to the plate and admit, hey, a mistake was made here also.
No, that's absolutely correct. And again, the use of language. I mean, the congressman was asking, okay, does no quarter comport with the rules of armed engagement? And he wouldn't answer the obvious question that it does not. Now, you know, maybe he could have answered and said, well, you know, the secretary was speaking hyperbolically in terms of policy, that we are not going to allow, you know, Iran to squirm out of this, et cetera, et cetera. We're not talking about a tactical circumstance when you have enemy personnel who are, you know, out of combat or helpless, and we're going to slaughter them anyway. And, you know, I mean, again, there are ways he could have handled this. But again, I think that would have put him in a very difficult situation with his superiors. So it's better for him to do what he was doing. Just tap dance, tap dance, tap dance, tap dance.
I know. Politically, it's the right thing to do. But my gosh, otherwise, on a human level, on a logistical level, on so many other levels, the only level that is right is the political level. But there's 50 other levels where it's the wrong thing to do.
And let's be fair here too, Gary, is that, you know, the Democrats are basically treating these guys like a piñata that they can essentially smack around like this because it's, hey, they're vulnerable targets. I just wonder how, again, I haven't looked up the records of these specific congressmen about how much, let's say, parallel nonsense they've been spouting out over the years, whether it was, you know, anything that happened under the Biden administration or whether it's the war in Ukraine and so on and so forth, where they're more than willing to engage in the same kind of imperial hubris when it suits their political needs, but when they've got a soft target in this administration that they can milk for partisan value, they're going to go ahead and do it. I mean, that's the way politics look. If it were the other way around, if we had a Democratic administration doing this, that same poor admiral would be sitting there getting grilled by the Republicans. And that's unfortunately the way politics works.
You know, besides the what I'll call underhanded questions that Mulder was asking and what Smith is doing, besides the few that were like that, I'm glad they're actually doing their job here. I think a lot of these questions need to be asked, and they're holding their feet to the fire. And, you know, that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
They're doing their job for a change.
Yeah.
One section more with Representative Smith.
Mr. Zimmerman, Can you explain to me how it works, why it is considered to be intelligent for the president day after day after day to keep saying that Iran has agreed to things that very clearly they have not agreed to, which then becomes obvious to the entire world within some 24 to 48 hour time period? Help me out here. What is the strategy of the president standing up and saying, we have defeated them, the war is over, they've agreed to everything? I mean, doesn't that just make us look like a bunch of clowns past a certain point when it becomes obvious that that's not the case?
Congressman, the president's willingness to act decisively to protect Americans and our partners and allies has advanced U.S. credibility. It has not sunk U.S. credibility.
Well, but addressing this specific issue, we could have that debate in a different direction. But he has repeatedly said that Iran has agreed to things that they obviously have not agreed to. And let me ask the question this way. Is the president misinformed? Are people doing a bad job of informing him about what's going on? Is he that ignorant about the circumstances? Or is he just making it up as part of some, I don't know, six-dimensional chess strategy here? So why?
The president has the best information available to any head of state.
Why does he keep getting it wrong then?
The president does not keep getting it wrong. The White House is leading these negotiations to find a long-term solution.
I'm sorry, you have 20 seconds left here, but he doesn't keep getting it wrong. He says, literally, the strait is open. Iran has agreed to give up their nuclear weapons. Iran has agreed to give up their ballistic missile programs. That's your basic question. Is the Strait of Hormuz open? Has Iran given up their nuclear weapons?
The Strait of Hormuz is a complex situation right now where you have a severely degraded foe.
I hope you look back at this and understand how bad this is making you look. I mean, look, you can answer the question now. You can challenge me in 1,000 different ways. But to just pretend that reality isn't reality and say it over and over again in a public hearing, I'm sorry, that's not helping our credibility. Thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
I thought he couched everything beautifully at the end there.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Zimmerman couldn't give the true answer to the question, which is the president says these things because his family and cronies are making mint on the ups and downs of the crude Brent crude futures. And every time he opens his mouth and drives the price up or down, somebody's making a lot of money. Would that be the right answer that Mr. Zimmerman could have given? I wonder how the Congress persons would have responded to that one. I hate to say it, as somebody who supported Trump all three times he ran, I don't think anybody has ever seen corruption like this. I mean, these guys make Hunter Biden look like the Better Business Bureau. I mean, this is just, it's just so blatant. Maybe that's the really, really bad answer to the question nobody wants to hear. But the even worse answer to the question is Trump really so deluded sometimes that he actually thinks these things? I think, you know, Daniel's pointed out on many occasions, Trump seems to engage in, what's the word that we want? It's not conflation, something where you think something is true just because you want it to be true, and you open your mouth and out it comes.
Jim, I didn't even plan on this. I happen to have a video. What you just explained, here's how he does it. Watch this.
I'm not doing this politically. I'm just, look, everyone tells me it's unpopular, but I think it's very popular. When they hear that it's having to do with nuclear weapons, I think it's frankly very popular.
So, Jim, everyone tells me it's unpopular, but I think it's popular. That's how he rationalizes it.
Well, it is popular with a certain segment of the population, the people that voted Tom Massey out yesterday. I mean, yes, he does have at least half of his previous base, maybe more than that, who are the older, you know, especially boomer type, you know, what I call them, Trumpanzees, who will believe anything and everything that he says and anything and everything they say on Fox News. He still has that base, and I guess it's popular with them, and maybe that's all he cares about at the moment.
To think that that money could buy that seat and take it away from Massey just by flooding the zone with cash.
Gary, why do you hate democracy?
Mm-hmm. Right?
I mean, again,
the best government money can buy, right?
Exactly. God bless America and the American dollar. I mean, I don't know to what extent the Massey thing will be a Pyrrhic victory for the establishment. They say, okay, fine, we nail that scalp to the wall. Mm-hmm. But how many more Americans are starting to see this kind of rigging of the electoral process for what it is, that it's, yeah, like you said, the best democracy money can buy?
You know, I'm hoping that there will be a groundswell. There seems to be a one that is starting to erupt with MTG, with Tucker Carlson, mm-hmm. and now with this, what happened with Massey. I'm hoping that there will be more and more people realizing this for what it is.
Well, I hope so, too. But then that begs the question, okay, and how does that opposition manifest itself in an electoral system that is so thoroughly corrupt? Mm-hmm. In other words, you hear a lot of Americans talk about this and say, well, you know, we've got to run good candidates. Well, we'll start a new party, et cetera, et cetera. That presumes we can vote our way out of this. And we've just been shown that, no, you can't.
Jim, I want to play you one more thing. I have a montage here. It's just about mm-hmm. a little over a minute long. And it's from three diplomats, a British diplomat, a former British diplomat, an Iranian diplomat, and a Russian diplomat. Mm-hmm. And it's all in the last week, they all have said a very similar thing. I want to just play for you and get your take on the other end of it.
There's no trust with the United States government. I mean, they've three times, in fact, decided to do sneak attacks in the middle of negotiations. So there isn't any great sort of sense of confidence that, you know, you can come to an agreement. So the Iranians will insist, okay, but we want this in a formal legal treaty through the Security Council or through Congress. Trump can't do that.
So the most important issue right now is the question of trust. We cannot trust Americans at all. So everything should be exact. Everything should be defined very clearly before we can conclude a deal. And it is obvious that those things they have not been able to achieve militarily, they cannot achieve on negotiation table.
To my big regret, there are no diplomats on European side that are ready to engage, that are ready to do our professional job, what we were trained for, to get together, to find solutions, to propose solutions to our capital. The ones that I face are mere propagandists. This is a source of big frustration for me. But I think I will continue still my job here, and I will try to wake up at least some of my colleagues before it is too late.
So, Jim, on the world stage, there is no trust. They're all propagandists, and they can't do their jobs.
Well, I hate to accuse the three gentlemen of giddy optimism, but it's actually worse than they say, because I don't know that maybe they personally appreciate the full impact of what they're saying, but I'm not sure their listeners will. Mr. Crook, for example, said that's why you need a treaty and sort of the Security Council and all that sort of thing. The JCPOA was approved by the Security Council. The Minsk Agreement was approved by the Security Council. I mean, I've heard other commentators saying, well, the Russians on Ukraine, they're still looking for binding treaty guarantees. What are those to the U.S. government? They're not, they're pie crusts that are made to be broken, as in the Lenin's expression. I think it's a lot worse than they say. And I'm not sure not only these gentlemen, but the government's concerned, whether in Tehran or Moscow or Beijing, fully appreciate the depth of seriousness of that observation, that even with a binding treaty, even with a Security Council resolution, with any possible agreement that you can think of, it doesn't matter to the people in Washington. Mm-hmm. And one of the virtues of this administration, at least I can say, is that at least they're honest about it. They've made it clear that they're not bound by any kind of international law or international agreements, or for that matter, the U.S. Constitution, only by my own morality, as President Trump says. Now, I hate to say it, that's been true for a long time. The only difference is these guys actually admit it. You know, it was true under Biden, it was true under Bush, it was true under Clinton. I mean, we do not care about international rules, international agreements, any kind of law or even morality. We'll just do what we damn please. Nonetheless, the Iranians are still negotiating with us. The Russians are still negotiating over Ukraine. The Chinese still play the negotiation game with us. You know, Trump and Xi talked about Taiwan and so forth. Do they really understand that these negotiations have no place to go? That even if you got all of their terms agreed to, signed, sealed, delivered, you know, wrapped up with a bow, it still doesn't mean anything? Do they really fully understand that? I'm not sure they do.
We see the amount of chaos and confusion on the surface that's right before our eyes. You can only imagine what's going on behind closed doors.
I think so. And again, I think these other countries probably have some sense of that. But I don't know if they realize how deep it goes. I mean, you know, President Trump says, hey, we behave like pirates now. Well, okay. How do you negotiate with a pirate then?
Again, that was said publicly.
Yeah, that was God only knows what they say in private. You know,
I
shudder to think.
Jim, I love having your take on things. So appreciate you joining me today. It was a great discussion.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
You know, we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.